Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your long fuse of music, news, and aesthetic sport. I'm your host, Ben Ratliff. You're listening to Fancy by Iggy Azalea. One of the so-called songs of the summer.
I mean, the truth of the matter is you were probably listening to Fancy by Iggy Azalea before you came to us.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're just this is just, you know, more of the same.
Absolutely.
What you were doing before you turned us on.
When did we become part of the pop machine? When did we become co-opted?
That's a good question, but I think in the next half hour we will assert our difference from the pop machine.
Speak for yourself.
Look at it from above.
I want to be in the Borg.
From a great height. I don't think you do.
John Caramonica wants to be in the Borg.
John Caramonica is with us today talking about, well, it's sort of like the Loch Ness Monster of pop culture, the summer song.
Can we just kill that concept right off the top? Like, is that rude to do?
You are proposing that there is no such thing.
Well, I'm proposing that, like, the endless pieces of content that are created around the notion of Song of the Summer, especially the ones that arrive in, like, April, are not a helpful thing to music writing or to prognostication or anything of that nature. Also, it's always been frustrating to me because it's possible that there are songs that become very popular in the summertime that also maybe have more of a light, breezy summer quality than a dark, foreboding winter quality. Yeah. But everybody has a different summer. It's very hard to soundtrack universally, not to be all microculture about it, but it always seems, I feel like when someone tries to tell me what the song of the summer is, all I know is what their summer's like.
Well, okay, the ideal, maybe, of the song of the summer is sort of like the ideal of what happens in, like, the great carnival cultures in the New World, you know, where, like, for a couple of days, all the people are partying in the street nonstop, and all these trucks are riding around playing these different songs, new songs composed for that week. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the carnival, it is clear that one song has won. Now, of course, that's not really the way it happens, but that's supposedly the way it happens. So don't you think that there's some element of that going on? It's summertime. People are outside. Songs are flying out of car windows. People are walking down the street listening to music. There's sort of more music out there and being shared in public spaces.
Yeah, but,
and at some point, something wins.
But not to be that guy, but like, what cars, what streets, what city? If we go to your old neighborhood in Washington Heights, what's coming out of those windows? You go to my old neighborhood of Chesapeake Bay, what's coming out of those windows?
Right.
It's very, very hard whenever I see these universally accepted songs of summer. It's a very particular demographics song of the summer.
Right.
Or a song of a particular demographic summer that doesn't do a lot for me. It's so self-evident. People pat themselves on the back in June and be like, well, Fancy's going to be really huge. It's like, well, duh, Fancy's already huge.
Right.
You want a cookie? Like, want a cookie for that article?
It's already huge. But what about the songs that hang in there?
Which I'm intrigued by. I'm intrigued by songs with longevity. I'm intrigued with songs that mutate over the course of their life. That maybe mean one thing when they came out and then mean a different thing later on.
And have a different application.
Absolutely.
As time goes by.
Now, Fancy, I don't think is that. Fancy, it's funny, we're talking about car windows. If you did not hear Iggy Azalea rapping on that song, and you heard the beat coming out of a car window, you'd be like, oh, it's sort of like a thin version of a DJ Mustard record.
Yes.
And DJ Mustard is the most important hip-hop producer of the last 12 months, and it has every hallmark of his production from in the background to the bulbous quality of the bass.
So why aren't we talking about a DJ Mustard record?
Oh, we will. We'll get there. Mm-hmm. And like de facto, we are talking about a DJ Mustard record, just not one that he's making any money for.
Yes.
Iggy is like a controversial and yet surprisingly palatable figure. I think, strangely, she's very relatable to a lot of people, even if your hip-hop purist audience doesn't really want much to do with her.
Yeah.
I find listening to her rap pretty taxing.
Mm-hmm.
she really works over the words really intensely. Despite what the lyrics of this song say, I do not believe that she's a professor of physics.
Oh, you don't?
So, no. So I don't know if I could trust her on other things.
But somehow she passes a lot of tests.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. She does. And obviously a lot of the success of this song is Charlie XCX on the hook.
Sure.
It's this sort of hollaback girl, like chanty, mean girl, like sort of like punkish thing.
Yeah.
And it really anchors the song. So when Iggy's kind of rapping in a really like mealy-mouthed way, Charlie XCX comes in and is like, boom, boom, boom. It really centers the thing. And you have this beat that's very propulsive and this very rigid, strong chorus.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of allows Iggy to be maybe not 100%.
Mm-hmm.
But that song was number one on the Billboard chart for, I don't know, 7 weeks, 8 weeks,
mm-hmm.
Which was insane.
Yeah.
You know, Iggy Azalea is someone who people didn't even give a chance to 8 months ago. They were like, well, that'll come and go.
How about this? Let's get back to the topic. Summer. There's certain emotions and ways of being associated with summer.
Right.
There's a certain jouissance.
Some might say.
Some might say. And a certain silliness.
Mm-hmm.
And a certain willful disposability, maybe.
I don't know anything about disposable music. That just sounds like something a classist New York Times critic would say.
Oh, my God.
All right, I don't know any of those classes, New York Times critic.
No,
do you?
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
In the old days, however, there was a notion that songs in the summer, you know, that summer hits were the greatest pieces of, you know, disposable.
A fluff.
Here today, gone tomorrow. Like the ultimate flotsam.
Do you remember that there was a really, I thought, good piece in the magazine, Sunday Magazine, about, it was in the mid-90s when the Method Man, Mary J. Blige collaboration was like a thing.
Yeah.
And there was sort of a song of the summer piece about how kids were engaging with that song and about
mm-hmm.
the
me. I don't remember.
It's a good piece.
I was reading Sports Illustrated back then.
That's dead. Yeah. And I look where it got you.
Here I am in the locker room.
I remember really enjoying that piece. We'll link to it on the blog. Hmm. We'll dig it up and link to it on the blog. From my memory of the piece, it talked just a lot about like individual interactions with songs.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you can have something that feels like that flotsam, but if you don't have a particular connection, if you're not somehow touching it and connected to it in a way, then I don't think it qualifies as a song in summer. It has to speak.
It has to be meaningful flotsam.
It has to be far away and yet speak individually,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah, this is quickly getting so abstract.
Right.
And it's just this conversation is kind of imploding.
Well, here's the thing. I don't like, largely because I never want to write these pieces. I don't ever want someone to be like, you've got to write a song of the summer piece. Because it seems such blatant poppycock to me.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can make a case that Iggy, in her direct indirectness, had that record.
You mean in her rigorous fakeness?
Yes. Almost you want to root for it.
Yeah.
She's so devoted to
it.
It's admirable. Then what comes along to knock Iggy off the top of the chart is easily one of my least favorite songs of the year,
yeah.
Which is Rude,
yes.
By the Canadian band Magic.
Yes. Exclamation.
Right. That's
mark.
Why I said it loud. Mm-hmm. Not because I like it.
Mm-hmm.
You mess with this song?
First Canadian band at the top of the charts in quite a while.
Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
Like Sloan?
I think, no, Sloan wasn't the last one. Oh, Nickelback.
Oh, Nickelback way better than Magic.
Yeah.
Nickelback. I'll take Nickelback.
Well, Magic
twice on Sundays.
Magic is a light reggae song.
Can we just go home now?
Light reggae songs perhaps work well in the middle of the summer.
I think that's totally right. And
when
I would actually venture
dying
to,
of heat.
I would venture to say that a lot of people who like this song don't actually even know what the song's about.
What is it about?
The song is about wanting to marry your girlfriend and getting rejected by her father. And then the chorus to the father, who has been like, you can't marry my daughter, is, why you gotta be so rude?
You made that up. It's not really about that.
That is emphatically what it is about.
But you see,
I swear that that's what it's about.
I've just demonstrated that I can listen to an entire song without taking any of the actual words in as words.
It's a good thing that you are not a reliable. It's a good thing that none of us are leaning on you. I saw this band in concert.
Yeah.
I went to review them because I sensed that this was going to become a number one song. And
yeah.
I mean, not like I'm a genius. I mean, like it was on the way. This is an annoying band.
Mm-hmm.
This is a guy who's clearly smarter than the music he's making.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see him on stage and he knows what a racket it is. He knows how absurd it is.
Mm.
And look, he just like slap dumb fell into this thing. Mm-hmm. And this also, it sounds a little bit like The Police, mm-hmm. but like anything, you know, but I would take Bruno Mars's Police ripoff, which is like fully produced and epic in scale, anytime over this guy's like jobless starter kit 101 stuff.
But let's get back to the topic at hand. John, I have a theory that I'm working on right now.
Why you gotta be so mean?
You actually loved, I mean loved, one of these songs under discussion today, you'd be happy to point to it and say, that's the song of the summer.
So it's only about your personal love?
In your case.
I think that
you're poo-pooing the notion of the song of the summer. Only because you don't love any of my songs in the summer. Yeah, only because you don't love any of these songs.
No, but like, here's a good example. Like, I really love, for example, we talked about DJ Mustard. I really like Who Do You Love, which is a record from the YG album that Drake is on that sort of snuck out in January, February, but has kind of become a big hit in late spring and early summer. Mm-hmm. It's a big hip-hop hit, not a big pop hit. I can say I really like that song, but I also don't feel compelled to put a Song of the Summer hat on it. Mm. Even if I think it's better than most of what we're talking about. Mm. Hey, I don't need a Song of the Summer to define me.
Yeah.
I'm out here defining myself.
Yeah.
I don't need some song to define me.
Is there a song right now among current hits that you kind of wish people would point to and say, that's the Song of the Summer? That's brilliant.
Yes.
That's everybody should be listening to that. Well, that would be stupid to say everybody should.
No, I do think everybody. Two On by Tinashe, which is like a very big R&B hip-hop radio song right now. To me, it's maybe my number one song of the year. It's certainly top three or four. And when I listen to that song, which is very sort of like, it feels like a high NRG Aaliyah song.
Yeah.
And I listen to that and I'm like, that's a major record. That should be a pop top five record. Mm-hmm. It's clearly a R&B hip-hop top five record, but it should be a pop top five record.
Yeah.
And I listen, and Drake did he hopped on the song without, like, he just released his own version of it. So the radio version that's getting played now is this sort of like hybrid of like the original Tinashe song with the Drake verse kind of like Frankenstein on at the end. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful and it's smart and it's sexy and it's got a lot going for it. And I'm like, oh, this could, if this was the thing that was blasting out of every car window from the Upper East Side to Washington Heights to Sheepshead Bay to Astoria.
You'd write that think piece.
Or at least I'd talk about it on the Bopcast. Mm-hmm, I don't know if I want to. I might be done.
But it's not. But that isn't quite happening.
It isn't happening. But I would be excited if it were. Even if it was, maybe there's a think piece there and maybe there's not. I mean, you can make the case that Fancy is sort of that song. Do I want to write 1,500 words about it?
It's a little depressing because it's all a losing battle, really. I mean, someone else is in control. Back to this idea of, like, you know, the carnival floats going around and general consensus coming up with the answer. That just doesn't happen. But in any case, maybe we should hear that Tinashe song.
Yes, because I'm going to force it down, people. If you are not the type of person to come to Tinashe, I'm going to make Tinashe go to you.
All right. Let's hear it. All right, that's Two On by Tinashe.
Is that your song of the
summer? John Caramonica's song of... No, it's you. It's all you. I'll tell you what mine is, though. Good Kisser.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a weird song.
I love it.
It's a weird song, though. This is Usher, by the way.
Usher's song, Good Kisser. The rhythm, the drum loop, I just think is fantastic. It's so simple and strange. The one and the two, there's only a kick drum and nothing else. And then... I mean, basically, it sounds like a tiny little rhythmic detail that was going to be patched into a mix.
And then it became the
star of the show, looping over and over.
It also forces him into a slightly less Usher-like form of singing.
True.
That's really what was jarring to me about it, was hearing Usher sing in a different way than you're used to hearing him sing.
Yeah.
I like that Usher is flexible enough, which is not something he gets credit for really very much, but he's flexible enough to respond to a beat like this with a novel approach.
Mm-hmm.
he's not so fixed.
Yeah.
Which is good.
But again, like, it's just a great song. Nothing particularly summery about it. Could be listening to that Christmas time. Be
absolutely.
Very happy.
That'd be a good song to have playing off of your angel at the top of the Christmas tree. Or from Mistletoe. That's a good Mistletoe song. Can we sell those? NYT.com/store?
We could put it in the store.
Yeah, okay, we'll do that. There's gonna be branded Mistletoe with Good Guess We're Playing.
Should we talk about Nico and Vins?
Would it be wrong to do that?
Well, Nico and Vins have a song. They're Afro-Norwegians. That's the headline.
They are.
And they have a song.
Is that the headline?
It's and there's a song called Am I Wrong? And it's also quite light.
Yes, and like the Magic song, yeah. Like Rude, it's also very post-Police.
Yeah.
Am I Wrong was very big in Europe earlier this year and sort of seeped over. And Am I Wrong, the success of Am I Wrong really reminds me a lot of kind of what's happening with Arn. It's sort of like Am I Wrong versus Two On. Two On is like a great pop song that's like very affirmatively an R&B song, so pop radio doesn't really touch it.
Mm-hmm.
Am I Wrong is like a good pop song that's sort of R&B-ish, whereas urban radio will not touch Am I Wrong.
Right.
But pop radio would much rather play that than play a Tinashe record.
Yeah.
Am I Wrong, there's like a lightness to it. It doesn't really leave much of a fingerprint.
Yeah.
It's weirdly like an issues kind of R&B song. It's sort of like a social uplift song.
Mm.
I remember I was putting them into YouTube a couple months ago just to see what they had done, and they were performing it. I think it was like the Nobel Peace Prize ceremony.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, I swear. Oh my God.
Like the side lounge of the...
On like the big stage in front of people with tuxedos singing these issues R&B songs. I'm not making this up. We will also put a link to that.
That's a weird kind of side door they stepped into there.
And they're not particularly established as an act. Like, they've only been around for a couple of years. But people, I guess, I don't think Americans like it because it's issues R&B. I think they've sort of – it's like the Talib Kweli of pop R&B. But I think that it has exploited some kind of hole, some kind of tear in the system where great traditional R&B cannot be tolerated by pop.
Right,
but
exactly.
Pop will – is sort of in the way that like Iaz was famous 3 or 4 years ago.
Yes.
You know, if we're being honest, it's black music not made by black Americans. It's not a coincidence, I think, that a lot of these sort of pop R&B records, including one that we will talk about later in the show, is black music, black pop, not made by black Americans.
So you're saying it's like the result of a categorical flaw.
It feels like it.
Yeah.
And I think not – like J.R. Rodham, who produced the Iaz record and the first Jason Derulo album, I think – found a really interesting niche when he was producing those records and making these sort of clean pop records that were almost like maybe even slightly Caribbean in flavor, but didn't code as R&B to pop radio programmers and therefore kind of like slipped through the cracks and created their own world.
Mm-hmm.
Because that world was created 3 or 4 years ago, Nico and Vins can come in and just sort of like own that space because no one else was currently kind of owning that space.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I find it hard to be excited about Nico and Vins.
You do.
Yeah, weird, right?
Let's let the people hear just a second.
Just a touch?
Just a
touch?
Second. Because that's all you need. But that's just how I feel. Ooh. But that's just how I feel. Ooh. That's just how I feel. Trying to reach the things that I can't see. There were the Nobel
Peace
Prize winners.
They are laureates. Let's
Nico
not.
And Vince.
I don't want to be unfair. These guys are clearly laureate one and laureate two.
Mm.
So, you know, good for them. But it's hard for me to be excited about Nico and Vince.
So who knew that Sam Smith would be one of the voices of the songs of the summer?
Even I did not know that.
No.
And I think you can actually contend that even Sam Smith did not know that. And maybe even Sam Smith is not, despite the popularity of that album. It's weird that the songs from that album that are kind of like keeping him in the conversation.
Yeah.
We've talked about Sam Smith before.
Yeah.
Very regal, dignified, restrained singer. There's sort of like a dancey mix of Stay With Me.
Yeah.
That is more suitable for radio than the kind of more languorous version.
Yeah.
And then an interesting thing happened, which is the song that he broke through on, which is Latch, which was Disclosure's first big single in the UK after many, many EPs and indie singles. He's the vocalist on that song, and that's what got him his deal, and et cetera, et cetera. But he was not a known entity. And this is coming up on 18 months ago, 2 months, 2 years ago, maybe. That song, weirdly, is now, I don't know if it's top 10. It's certainly top 20 on the Billboard Hot 100. And that's just like the slowest burn ever.
Yeah.
But what I think happened is basically people got excited about Sam Smith, then listened to that album, and they were like, I don't know what to play off this album. Mm-hmm. It's like a bunch of it's like a bunch of Westminster Dog Show theme music.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying people just were blipped over to Disclosure from that?
I think the Disclosure song was sort of in the ether, and then it became a way to put Sam Smith on your station without having to slow down the tempo and like play a dirge.
Sure. I heard it performed acoustic guitar and voices at a boys' summer camp this summer.
By Sam Smith?
Which is like one of, no, not by Sam Smith. That to me is when I go visit family members at summer camp and there's like campfire time, people get out their acoustic guitars and they play a brand new song.
Yeah.
That's sort of one of the symbols to me of,
you know,
the song of the
and
summer.
And how was it?
It was great.
Yeah. For all of Ben's relatives listening, you did awesome.
No, it's really good. I feel that we're moving toward Ariana Grande.
We're not, but we'll go there anyway. Ariana Grande has become, that's sort of like the anti-Nico and Vince. I mean, Nico, that Nico and Vince song just sort of like, it floats. It's like, did you see any photos of the haboob that recently crawled over Phoenix? Do you know what a haboob is? A haboob is a big dust storm. And it's like 2 miles high, and it looks like the blob in the movie from the 50s. So there are all these photos and great videos of like the haboob like slowly creeping over Phoenix.
Yeah.
That's sort of like the Nico and Vin song to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whereas the Ariana Grande song is like the tornado that comes and tears your town up.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, the Ariana Grande song is coming. Like, it's much more like that. And Iggy Azalea is also on that song. Mm-hmm. In her inscrutable way.
We're talking about the song Problem.
Yes, and Problem has like, it's like a weird like mid to late 80s saxophone beat. Like,
or Macklemore saxophone thing.
Yeah, or Leif.
Depending. Or Leif,
yeah,
yes.
You know, if we're going to go there.
Yeah.
But it has that sort of like a slightly, the gritty texture of the productions, just slightly. And Ariana Grande has like a really big voice and like she's tossing her ponytail back and forth. Yeah. And Iggy comes in and just like, you know, just like chews up like a chew toy, just like chewing the thing up. I don't know. That's a very big record and kind of like in a very different way than the Nico Vins record is a very big record.
Sounds like you think it's trying too hard.
I think it's trying hard.
Maybe you like songs that are extraordinary without trying too hard.
I like songs that propose difficult questions and then answer those questions.
Yeah.
A thing that I do like about Problem is I think the production is unexpected. Mm-hmm. I don't think people are making, apart from you are right to highlight the Macklemore commonality. Mm-hmm. People aren't making R&B records this way. And Ariana Grande, even though she's a pop singer, has like traditional R&B chops. So then you have Ariana Grande, who's this one kind of singer and had like a tremendous pop presence. And then, to be honest, the counterpoint ends up being Jason Derulo, who Derulo to me is maybe doesn't quite have the R&B chops of even someone like Ariana Grande, but is like a tremendous pop writer and thinker and all of a sudden this ubiquitous pop presence. I had this kind of come to Jesus moment with him on a recent vacation where I was in the car a lot.
Yeah.
And just, you know, I just from every angle was Jason Derulo was coming at me.
Uh-huh.
He's got 3-4 hits working at the same time.
So the ubiquity is part of it.
Definitely that matters.
Yes.
A lot of different car windows.
And the fact that you weren't expecting it from him.
No. You know, Jason Derulo, it's funny. That album, his album, which first of all is a re-release of an album that came out in Europe last year. Mm-hmm. So these songs, a few of these songs have been in circulation for quite some time. The new album, the American version, has a few cuts specifically recorded for the American release. Mm-hmm. But it's a bit of a Frankenstein-y album. So these songs have been in currency, but a lot of them are cresting right now. Mm-hmm. And when I was in this trip in this car, it just started to crystallize for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fraud because it's so clear to me that this is Jason Derulo's summer. Even though that record came out 3 months ago in the U.S. and 9 or 10 months ago in Europe, it is, everything is lined up in such a way that he is crowding the field. He is gaseous. He is taking up all available space. He's not liquid. He's not solid. He's gaseous.
And do you think about him as an individual force when you hear him now, or do you think about the thing about the Song of the Summer is that it's like a physical reaction. Mm-hmm. You don't so much think about, you know, the greatness of the singer or whatever. It's just this, like, big mm-hmm. force. So when you hear these Jason Derulo songs, do you think, Jason Derulo, the auteur, how interesting?
Well, here's the thing.
Or do you just think that are you just enveloped by the sound?
Well, here's the thing. When Derulo first came out as part of the sort of J.R. Rotem farm team, it didn't feel like Derulo was a genuine presence. He felt like he was almost like a Milli Vanilli guy, you know, put out to be in front while Rotem had all the ideas. Mm. What's interesting, Rotem's not involved in this record, best I can tell, or if he is, it's only in a passing way. What's interesting to me is there is a hardness and a toughness and a slight sexual aggression on this record that is new coming from Jason Derulo.
Right.
He has a writing credit on, I think, every song or almost every song.
Right. I got the sense, by the way, when I went to Jingle Ball last Christmas, mm-hmm. that maybe he was booked before these new songs came out.
That's probably right.
So he was sort of like presenting his nasty side.
And people were not.
The moms were alarmed.
Well, I bet the moms are grooving right now. Mm. They want them some Derulo, I bet. I wonder if this is closer to what he feels like inside, his natural thing. He has an interesting ear for production. Mm. Wiggle, which is a big song on this record, has a toy flute or a toy whistle as the main musical bed. I don't know if I'd go so far as to say Jason Derulo auteur, but Jason Derulo has definitely undone the Jason Derulo of old on this record.
Think about him differently now.
And I think about him a lot. And well, I did write. And, you know, we have our Sunday playlists. Yeah. We both do them. I typically try to use a Sunday playlist to pick up small albums or singles or things that maybe I'm not going to cover in the daily section, but I feel deserve coverage.
That are being overlooked.
You know, and I feel like that's how I've historically used it. And I just, when I was on vacation, I was just like, you know what? It's time for a mini polemic, a small polemic. So in Sunday's playlist, I have, you know, it's not long. It's 250, 300 words. And it's just like, let's just think about Jason Derulo differently.
Well, why don't we translate that polemic into sound and hear a little bit of Jason Derulo's Wiggle as we leave the program.
Featuring Snoop Dogg.
I want to remind all the listeners that the song of the summer is within you. Thanks, John Caramonica.
It's only within you if I put it there. Wiggle, wiggle, wiggle. Wiggle, wiggle, wiggle. Wiggle, wiggle, wiggle. Just a little bit of... Cadillac, Cadillac, pop that trunk. Let's take a shot, alley-oop that dunk. Tired of working at 9 to 5. Well, baby, let me come and change your life. And that's our show. You can read John Caramonica's mini manifesto on Jason Derulo and the sound and song of the summer in his playlist column at nytimes.com/music. Listen to our Spotify playlist for other songs of the summer. Our producers are Jeremy Egner and Jocelyn Gonzalez, and we'll come at you next week. Shake what your mama gave you, misbehave you. I just wanna strip you, dip you, flip you, bubble babe you. What they do, taste my raindrops, cable. Now what you will and what you